Hello and welcome. I'm Tracy Doakes, President and CEO of MCNC. And as always, I thank you for joining us again for the MCNC Community Connect, a podcast where leaders and innovators regularly meet to discuss some of today's hottest technology topics and trends. Today, I am lucky enough to be joined by Nate Denny, Deputy Secretary of Broadband and Digital Equity at the North Carolina Department of Information Technology, and our very own Tommy Jacobson, MCNC's Vice President and Chief Operations Officer, to discuss our exciting HERO project that officially broke ground in Sanford on September 5th. Thank you both for joining me at the groundbreaking event last week at Central Carolina Community College and for sharing some additional time today as a follow-up to dive deeper into the project and its generational impact on North Carolina. So, Tommy, I'm going to start with you. Let's talk a bit about the HERO project and its impacts, and specifically, let's talk about that donut hole that I know I have told this story many times, that the first or second day that I started, you showed me this donut hole in the middle of the state where MCNC did not have any fiber on our network map. So can you talk a bit about that and why this particular project is significant to that?
Sure. Happy to be here today for all those listening. So yeah, I think when I look back on what MCNC has achieved in building out our fiber network over the last decade and a half, we were very fortunate to secure two NTIA BTOP grants in the 2010 to 2013 timeframe, which enabled us to build out the bulk of our operating fiber plant that we have in the state. But as you both know, and everybody listening knows, North Carolina is a fairly large state. So when we completed that project, that was about 1,700 miles in new infrastructure, there were areas of the state that we could not cover, which I began affectionately calling donut holes. And as a result, when you started 4 years ago, we were outlining, you know, where priorities might exist to do more build of infrastructure, and I identified one of those larger donut holes, which was the southeast corridor of the state, roughly running between Sanford to Fayetteville over to Jacksonville, and then a second area that was between Winston-Salem and Albemarle. And we started identifying those being key points, that key areas of the state that we would want to secure funding for if there was funding made available to build additional middle mile fiber in those areas. And as a result of the NTIA's middle mile program, grant program, we're going to be adding approximately 210 miles of infrastructure through those areas to our already existing footprint of over, 4,500 miles around the state that we're now operating NC Ren over. So the significance of that is that we have, once complete with the project, we'll have one less donut hole to worry about in the state. There's still other areas that need some attention, and we'll look at those when we can. But this is a huge win for the state of North Carolina and the citizens in those areas.
Yeah, I agree totally. And I believe one of the things that you may not have mentioned is that this is truly an economic development effort for North Carolina as well. So the more that we can have internet accessibility to these areas, the more people will be able to learn and work and have healthcare, all of those things that make thriving communities, and hopefully will also draw more companies into those areas. Nate, I'll say again, thank you for joining us last week at our groundbreaking to kick off this project. Now that we all have a deeper understanding of what HERO is, let's elaborate more on the lasting impacts of this project and what it will have on the digital divide and how it has been labeled as a force multiplier for our citizens in North Carolina.
Sure, Tracy. Thanks again for having me here. I was glad to be at the event last week and glad to talk with you and Tommy a little bit today. Tracy, as you and I have talked about a bunch of times, you know, COVID really laid bare the urgency of this issue and its impact in literally every walk of life, right? Obviously, you and I worked together when COVID started. And at the time, you know, I had kids at home, you know, that needed access to technology. My wife and I were both trying to work from home, right? And eating up bandwidth on, you know, a dozen Teams meetings apiece every day. not to mention telemedicine access, right? You know, the biggest, I think, moment of realization of privilege that I experienced over the course of the pandemic was on a telemedicine appointment with my then 1-month-old pediatrician, right? And not having to go sit in a waiting room and potentially expose her during a global health crisis. And I lived at the time in Durham, where I had multiple providers trying to compete for my service, driving down costs and fiber, incredibly fast service and high quality service. And a lot of North Carolinians don't have that, right? Don't have that opportunity today. And that's what our work at the Department of Information Technologies Division of Broadband and Digital Equity is all about, right? Figuring out how to get people access to high-speed internet, help them afford the service, get them the devices and the skills they need to really participate in the modern economy, help them get telemedicine, access education resources, work from home, apply for jobs in a place they don't live, access government services, and so on and so forth, right? Every single aspect of life. And so MCNC and your work and your organization touch so many of those aspects of life, right? Your work connecting anchor institutions, universities, community colleges, providing that kind of backbone of service that then other providers build off of, you know, that has a real direct impact both with consumers of those services, but also with individuals and communities that lack service or don't have the ability to really connect and participate with every part of life today. So in the communities where this HERO project's going to be running, right, I think you're going to be helping a lot of both institutions and individuals access the high-speed internet economy. And so we're grateful for that. And we were glad to be a supporter of the project as you sought federal funding, and look forward to working with you to help North Carolinians realize the benefits of those investments.
Excellent. And yes, I do remember the early days of COVID when we were working together and how difficult that was. Not for us as much as it was for the communities that we served, and hearing the stories and the plight of those folks and trying to do whatever we could to assist. And I feel as though we've come a long way from the COVID world, but to your point, what it did was expose what was already there pre-COVID that still exists today. And obviously that's why this project and many like it are so, so important. And, you know, as we talk more about, you know, the internet being this basic fundamental part of modern life, particularly in this digital world, the Internet for All initiative will build this new higher speed infrastructure, teach these digital skills, provide necessary technology to ensure everyone across the nation, including communities of color, rural communities, older Americans that tend to suffer the most, will have access and skills they need to participate fully in today's digital society. This initiative has three funding components, one being the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment, which is the BEAD program, the State Digital Equity Act program, and the Enabling Middle Mile Broadband Infrastructure program, which saw more than 235 applications submitted nationwide, including MCNCs. So in all, North Carolina has been awarded a significant amount of funding for BEAD and other grants over the last couple of years. Nate, can you speak to what those other grants are and what has been available to North Carolina over the last few years?
Governor Cooper was early to identify this once-in-a-lifetime funding moment that the state of North Carolina would have, this opportunity to close the digital divide really across the board. And that was because North Carolina was receiving over $5.5 billion of American Rescue Plan Act money during the pandemic economic recovery work that Congress and the Biden administration put together. So of that $5.5 billion, Governor Cooper proposed and the General Assembly agreed to use more than $1 billion of it to get a jump start on every other state. So all those programs, Tracy, that you just mentioned, the BEAD program, Broadband Equity Access and Deployment, the Digital Equity Act programs, because there are actually several baked in there together, and the Middle Mile Infrastructure Program, those are all from the bipartisan infrastructure law. And we were able to get a jump start on all of those by putting $1 billion into programs that already existed in North Carolina, the Great Grant Program that's connected a huge amount of communities across North Carolina, and the new Completing Access to Broadband Program and Stopgap Solutions Program. And I think importantly, the governor created the nation's first Office of Digital Equity and Literacy. So we didn't just focus on subsidizing fiber build out because you could run fiber right up to your front porch. And if you can't afford the service or don't have a laptop at home or basic digital skills, you're still going to get left behind. And the governor wanted to make sure that we didn't leave people behind on the adoption question, right? That we were making those investments in a way that would allow every North Carolinian in every community, no matter their background, realize the benefits of those investments across the board. So that's all ARPA work, American Rescue Plan work. Now the bipartisan infrastructure law passes, right? And that does several things. It creates this $42 billion pot that we call the BEAD program that's divvied up among states. North Carolina's share of that fund is $1.53 billion, right? So far, we're about 55-60% of the way through awarding our ARPA funds, and we're ramping up for early in calendar year 2025, getting started on the BEAD program, which our team will at the North Carolina Department of Information Technology will deploy. The Digital Equity Act program will bring tens of millions of dollars both to state government and to other nonprofits and community groups across the state. So our Office of Digital Equity and Literacy is going to implement about $22 million of that, potentially more over the next few years. And we are able to invest in a kind of ecosystem of community groups that can then go seek additional dollars on a competitive basis from the federal government. And then, of course, there's the Middle Mile Program, which y'all are the experts on, right? The state didn't seek those funds. We had a handful of North Carolina applicants. Sadly, only one winner, but I'm glad that y'all are getting that investment and that it's going to help so many people. So there's a ton of different programs there in terms of federal funding. I hope that helps kind of outline what does what and where we are in the process.
I think it does. And I'm so appreciative of the support that you and the governor's office and North Carolina Department of IT had as we were applying for the middle mile broadband infrastructure program, that grant. One of the questions, though, that I do have about ARPA, are you able to see success from any of the monies that have been granted from the ARPA fund so far?
Great question. You know, it's important, I think, and I think your audience is probably familiar with this, but, you know, when we do a groundbreaking or we announce an award, we're really kicking off a multi-year construction process, right? So we can't just snap our fingers and someone turn a modem on, right? And you know, have high-speed internet in their house. A lot of work has to happen, a lot of permitting, a lot of planning with the local community. I think y'all are on the front end of a lot of that work right now with the HERO project. But I'm pleased to say that between the investments of the Great Grant Program and the Completing Access to Broadband Program, we've now awarded projects that will serve 189,000 unserved homes and businesses in almost every county in the state of North Carolina so far. And wow. I actually got a list of about 10 of those projects that are complete. So I can say now people are in fact turning modems on. We are starting to see the benefits of that kind of slow motion investment, right? Yeah. Everybody wants their internet and they want it yesterday, right? And so when we have a big kind of press release and announcement and we're all like, yeah, look at all this money coming. And then people have to wait for another 18 months to 2.5 years. Obviously, that's a harder message to sell, but we're getting to that point, right? And we're finally completing some of these projects. And it's, I think, reassuring that between the American Rescue Plan and the bipartisan infrastructure law, the Biden administration and Congress have made such significant investments that we can actually get the job done. We can make sure between these big federal funding pots that every single home and business in North Carolina that needs high-speed internet access can get it. And that's just a tremendous change from where we were, as you'll recall, just a few years ago, where we were saying, hey, if we can get a little $10 million pilot program, we could really do a lot of good. We're just operating at a different scale now in terms of investment.
I agree. And I do remember that when I was at DIT, we were all lamenting about all of the problems and no money. And now we have lots and lots of money, but having to prioritize where the issues are and who needs it the most. Do you think that the, is it the FCC, what is 100 up and 20 down? Do you think that that will be something experienced by residents with the funding that's coming down the pike as well?
Yeah, that's the minimum standard for the investments we're making. And so our goal is for, and this is the commitment we make to the U.S. Department of Commerce through the BEAD program, is that with these dollars, we can get every North Carolinian bare minimum 100 megabits per second down, 20 megabits per second up, which, as you mentioned, the FCC has just redefined broadband as, right? So it's not enough to just have some internet service if you really want to participate in today's economy, right? You need much higher capacity, much more reliability. And so I think that's the level of service that North Carolinians can expect once these investments are made.
Absolutely. And so, Tommy, I'm going to go back to you for a second, because I know, you know, there have been conversations in our circle about, you know, 100 up and 100 down being, you know, the real standard that needs to come about over the coming years. What's your thinking around that? Just out of curiosity.
You know, coming from a family, with a now retired teacher, but then also, you know, they're not teenagers anymore. Well, one's still a teenager, but, you know, living at home during COVID, you know, if we had not had, you know, the 100 meg down and up, I don't think we would have survived. I mean, you had everything, you know, everybody's moving to a streaming technology now for entertainment, you know, gaming, is its own animal, especially when my son gets going on it. So I think minimally, 100 meg up and down is what is needed. Now, I start wincing a little bit when folks start saying, I really want gig. Well, I don't know that the average citizen needs gig. I think 100 meg is sufficient for the average citizen. If you're doing, some high speed data analytics or something like that, then yeah, you might can make that justification, but that doesn't typically happen in the typical household. But, and I'll point out that we have institutions on our network, that are comfortably being served by 1 gig. It takes a lot of data to really fill up a 1 gig pipe. So, but yeah, minimally, 100 meg is the standard, I believe, going forward. And fortunately, I think our investments that we're going to be doing with Hero are going to enable quite a bit of that.
Tracy, I don't know if this is within bounds of your podcast, but can I ask you and Tommy a question here? Can y'all talk a little bit about scalability, right? And what investments in fiber in particular mean? I mean, the needs that people experience today in September 2024, when we're recording this, as opposed to what they needed in the pandemic, much less before, that's changing constantly. Can you talk a little bit about that and the technology?
Well, for us, I'm going to look at this from the service provider perspective. I think, what we're going to be putting in the ground from a capacity standpoint, is by some standards, even today, some might say, well, why are you not putting more in? We're only putting 288 fibers in the areas that we're serving. We do have a spare conduit that we're putting in place, so we can always upsize that if needed into the future. And there's a balance here in terms of, cost versus, use going forward. I will say that obviously technology continues to improve every day. And, within a single strand of fiber, you have varying spectrums of light, just like you have, wireless spectrum, you have spectrum within fiber for colors of light that enable you to put more and more services on that using wave division technologies that, we operate some fibers around the state where we have 100 channels to our use that we could then put 100 gig services on one single strand of fiber. So, I think capacity going forward will not be a concern for us. And then when you take that down to the last mile, when you get into neighborhoods, any service provider that gets into neighborhoods and they build out from those pedestals, going back to their head end, they're still only maybe using one or two fibers, and then they light different frequencies of light. So you can't put a measure on how much capacity is there and the ability to change that out with optics, within the speed of that with optics. And so, even with my 1 gig service at my house, if the provider of that had a 10 gig service, I could get a 10 gig service if I wanted to pay for it. So that's always a good thing when you're putting in fiber. The scalability into the future is going to be there.
Well, to take this a step further, Nate, and I was trying to research this really quickly, but in 2022, when the president signed the Chips and Science Act, and I was asked to be a panelist at Duke when they were talking about the research that they were going to be doing with a lot of these dollars that they had available, and wanting to tap into talent across the state in these communities that they would not normally have been able to tap into. And the interesting thing about that is you're not going to be able to tap into those communities for those students and that talent unless they have connectivity to be able to work remotely and do the research that needs to be done. I think people may not make the connection between innovation, research, and how important connectivity is to all of those things, because many of the students today are learning remotely in many of the colleges. And I think that's going to continue to grow. And we go back to, the original statement around families in rural communities and communities of color and older generations not being able to participate in the digital economy is broader than that. We're talking about research and innovation and, the next you know, Einstein sitting in one of these rural towns that can't be discovered because the connectivity is not there for them. And so, you know, this is broader than just, you know, getting this connectivity. That's table stakes. That is basic. When you start to expand that out into science and research and AI and all of these things that it, you know, that are exploding into our society today, it will put these communities further and further behind if they don't have access to connectivity, and at a minimum 100 up and 20 down. But when we start talking about science and research and manufacturing, you know, the high-tech manufacturing coming into these communities, you're going to need even more. So I wanted to make that point, Nate. I don't know if you have any comments about that, but I was just recalling that because that's a tremendous amount of funding too, and I feel like they're inextricably tied together.
Yeah. Tracy, that's a great point. It's funny, I just read this morning, U.S. Commerce put out a request for comment last week about how to support growing demand for data centers across the country. So we've got like 5,000 data centers in the country, but the federal government expects that number to grow by like 9% annually over the next decade or two. And, wow. You know, if you look at AI, quantum computing, right, there's going to be so much demand here over the next few years. And that has an impact both for kind of business generation and site selection, right? Like, how do you attract businesses or help businesses grow? But also to get back to the individual homes, the individual users, workforce, right? Like what brings yes. people to North, what brings companies to North Carolina? It's solid infrastructure investments and an incredibly well-educated workforce, right? So we've got to have this kind of high-speed connection in communities across North Carolina to make sure that people are getting the education opportunity, also to be an attractive site for growing business. And just all of this ties together. And the other point I'll hit, you know, and this is an area that Governor Cooper's really been focused on this year in particular, we've got to keep educating that workforce too, right? So it's not just enough, again, to put fiber in the ground. You've also got to make sure that folks have a good school and well-paid teachers and all the other resources they need to really take advantage of those opportunities.
Yes, that is a very, very good point. So, you know, we've talked about, you know, all of this funding coming together, you know, some connected to connectivity, some connected to innovations, science, research, and that's just going to continue to grow. So, you know, when we met last week at the groundbreaking, the overarching theme when we broke ground on this project was that this is our moment. And it's a moment we're not going to see again. And you think about our generation's transformative moment to reshape our world in ways similar to, you know, electricity or interstate highways in previous generations. When you hear this is our moment for both of you, what does this mean to you and where do we go from here? Tommy, I'm going to start with you on this one.
I mean, I think for me, it's recognition of the opportunity to do something, you know, powerful right now with, you know, funding that was made available to us, you know, through unfortunate, you know, economic pressures, but, you know, taking stock of that and then taking the, you know, the opportunity to go do good. You know, I think in some of the circles I run through, you know, you hear folks saying they don't want to continue to hear about the broadband problems. So let's take advantage of the money that's available to us now to do that. And so to your point, I think, you know, 5 years from now, if there's still shortfalls in access to broadband in this state, and we've spent, you know, nearly $2 billion by that point in time with, you know, funding from the feds, that you know, that's not going to be looked on very, very, very nicely. So I think this is, we've got to make best use of the money that we can now, take every opportunity to maximize that and move forward.
I agree. And then just to follow up on that, Tommy, for you, you've been at MCNC since you were an intern at our alma mater, NC State University. Go Wolfpack. I always have to throw that in. So for the listeners that, you know, routinely listen to us, I'm always going to make that plug. And I can sense that Nate is about to gear up to make one too for a competing lesser school. But Tommy, you know, you've been here when MCNC was the supercomputing center, when we had the BTOP grant, and now us having this wonderful opportunity through the support of NTIA and Golden Leaf Foundation again. Do you see this as, you know, our greatest pivot when you think about the history of MCNC and all that we've done over the last 40 years?
I mean, it's certainly in the, you know, it's in the top five of things that we've taken on in my tenure, obviously, back in the 2007-08 timeframe when we connected all 115 school districts to the NCREN network. That was a pretty powerful moment and an impactful moment for all of those districts that we now serve, and, you know, the nearly 200 plus charter schools that we serve as well. You know, couple that, you know, a similar project to connect rural healthcare entities around the state in our administration, North Carolina Telehealth Network. You know, and that's still a, you know, a growing network. We're still connecting, you know, clinics and hospitals to the network every week or so. You know, those are two very high profile, powerful programs. But you put the BTOP program there, and then now the middle mile program, and the extension of BEAD off of those routes that we've built and have been maintaining, it's pretty significant. So I would say it's definitely in the top five of things that we have done in my career. I was actually talking to one of our team members yesterday about my tenure, and, you know, just the explosion of internet capacity that we've had. I'm really going to start dating myself now and aging myself, but when I started here as an intern from the great university down in Raleigh, North Carolina State, you know, MCNC served probably 20 locations around the state. And we had an aggregate amount of bandwidth to the internet of 4.5 meg. To put that into context, today we're approaching 1,200 endpoints and nearly a terabyte of data to the internet. You know, when you factor in all of our private peerings with like Google and the commodity peering service that we maintain with the Internet 2 network. So just to think about, I can't even do the math on that, how many times over, you know, much more bandwidth that is from a percentage perspective. But it's really an amazing thing to contemplate. And now it took us 31 or 2 years to get there. But I don't think that we're done, truthfully. I think there's still opportunity for us to do more. I think, as you know, you've heard me say this, that if I have one regret about our BTOP programs, is I don't think it helped the average citizen enough. We obviously did a very good job of connecting community anchor institutions around the state, but as a middle mile provider focused on education and healthcare, you know, we weren't focusing our efforts on providing service to the last mile residential user. And I think some of the things that we're getting ready to launch and do and supporting other carriers that are residential providers, we can have even more impact. So that's something that I hope to achieve in my last, you know, five or so, however many years I've got here at MCNC, maybe more than five, who knows.
Right.
I'm starting to think that I'll never quit working. So, yeah.
Well, you may not if we keep going the way that we're going. And I think about that when, you know, I speak all the time about this being our moment. So Nate, I'd love to hear your perspective on what that means to you and where you think we'll go from here.
Yeah, Tracy, I'm glad to talk about that a little bit. You know, I think the potential is there for these investments to help all North Carolinians, literally all, Wolfpack and Tar Heels alike. I want your listeners to know that while I'm here trying to take the high road, Tracy, you can't see this, but is throwing up Wolfpack hand signs at me. But I'm trying to maintain focus on the good of the people of North Carolina.
Wow.
What really struck me at the event last week, and I think we talked about this there, was the importance of good partnerships across the board, right? And I think in North Carolina, we are poised to address this challenge more effectively than most of our peers in other states because the stars have aligned, right? Because you've got a unique federal funding opportunity, you've got unique leadership in, you know, Governor Cooper's foresight and work and planning to build here, your and Tommy's work at MCNC, the investments and the good work happening across our private sector internet provider partners, at the telephone and electric membership cooperatives who are more engaged in seeking more funding and building more fiber than we've ever seen before statewide. That's really a new-ish development, right? And then the shared bipartisan understanding at the General Assembly from members of both chambers, both parties who are hearing from their constituents about this need. We've got county commissions and county managers who are actively collaborating now through the Completing Access to Broadband process. They're helping us develop scopes of work that we can then compete out to internet providers. And you've got incredible nonprofit leadership from, you mentioned the telehealth network in North Carolina, the Rural Center, Dogwood Health Trust, the Institute for Emerging Issues, all of these organizations and their leadership are stepping up together at the right moment. And that's matched with this funding opportunity. And that's really inspiring to see. That's really exciting that we've just got in North Carolina the right combination of funding and leadership and people doing the work in these communities. That it's been a real pleasure and honor to kind of be working on this at this time with you and everyone else we just listed.
Yeah, I agree. And it's so interesting to me over the last 2 years, especially those conversations that we at MCNC have been having with all of those entities, mm-hmm. where we're all talking about, you know, even incumbent providers, you know, how do we fix this? How do we change our world in the most positive way possible? Because we have the opportunity to do so. I didn't know, you know, as we look at the BEAD funding in particular, if you wanted to talk a bit about the challenge process as it continues to evolve over the next period here.
Sure.
What that will do.
Yeah. So, you know, as we mentioned earlier, you know, right now we're in the process of spending down the American Rescue Plan funds and making sure that the great grant and the CAB, the Completing Access to Broadband programs, get us the good jump start that we have through that investment. At the same time, we're gearing up for BEAD, right? And so North Carolina has submitted an initial proposal that outlines to the federal government where we see the need, right? Where folks are unserved or underserved, what kind of involvement we see from our internet provider community, what other stakeholders are engaged, and how everybody's planning and working together. That initial proposal comes in two volumes, the first volume of which has been approved by the NTIA and the U.S. Department of Commerce, the second volume of which we are waiting for approval on and hope to get that any day now. We are really, I think, at the very close to the finish line on that. Once those are approved, we can start gearing up that competitive selection process. And so there are two phases that are going first. One is pre-qualification of internet providers to participate in the BEAD program, right? Figuring out who has the capacity, who has the capability and is willing to resource, willing to partner through these projects. And then the second is the challenge process you reference. So the challenge process is how we agree on the map, right? It's how we figure out who's really unserved and what locations are eligible to for internet providers to go out and grab competitive funds to build, right? As you'll recall, you know, we started this thing with mapping being one of our biggest challenges, right? We looked at who was served at the census block level. The FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, said if even a single home in a census block had high-speed internet, they called the whole census block served. The result was that levels of connectivity were really overstated. We have now completely changed our approach because of work happening at the federal government and here in state. We have much more granular visibility. We really see every location that doesn't have service now. And because of investments made in North Carolina in our mapping and our partnership with local governments, we were able to go back to the federal government and say that they had missed 116,000 unserved locations across the state. That was the largest feedback, the largest data set that any state provided. And we've seen estimates that suggest that increased our share of BEAD funding by somewhere between $300 and $500 million, right? So the mapping matters in a really big and direct way in North Carolina, but it's an evolving process, right? It's still not perfect. We still need a better understanding. Right now, the data suggests we've got about 236,000 unserved homes and businesses across North Carolina. We know that number is still not perfect. And so we're going through this challenge process so that eligible entities, and those are local governments, nonprofits, and internet service providers, can give the state and the federal government feedback about the map, right? And tell us, hey, your map, your data says we've got high-speed internet, but I can't connect with anything. And I called these providers and they said that they can't build there, right, without another $10,000 or something like that, right? So that challenge process launched last week and we've started to get our first challenges in. We've got until October to accept those challenges. So we need internet providers and nonprofits, community groups across the state to help us reach into these communities and get a better understanding of who's served and who's not, right? These decisions, we're not going to be able to solve the digital divide from Raleigh, much like from DC, right? It has to happen because of work happening in communities on the ground. And so I would urge you and Tommy and your whole team and your listeners all to figure out how you can weigh in on that challenge process. And you can go to ncbroadband.gov and find access to our challenge portal and participate in that process and help make sure that we have the right understanding of where the need is, right? What communities have the need so that we can meet this moment, so that we can make sure these investments work the way they were intended. So appreciate you asking the question. We need help on this one.
Well, and that's so interesting because what a difference 2 years makes with Secretary Raimondo and her team here 2 years ago to talk about, you know, this whole internet for all program. And I don't know if you remember, but we had that smaller group of county commissioners and town managers that were in that room heatedly talking about how their corner of the world, their corner of the state, their actual street was not being served, although it looked as if the whole area was being served. And so back to your point, it's going to be incumbent upon all of us, including you listeners out there, to ensure that these maps are right, that these communities can all be served, not just one street in a town, so that the funding can go where it needs to go to serve all of these communities. I will just never forget the painful stories I've heard from these county commissioners, just, you know, making a passionate plea for additional funding in their areas. And so I'll ask, you know, all of you here listening to make sure you are challenging these maps as they need to be challenged. So we talked about how this is our moment, and I still feel so passionate about the fact that this is our moment. And I do hope it's not fleeting. I do hope that we continue to keep coming back to this conversation and feel as enthusiastic about it when, as we're talking about it now, that we will in, you know, 18 months when, you know, all of this is getting built and we're still seeing gaps and trying to fill those gaps, and that we all still have either that same energy or can pass that baton off to people who are just as enthusiastic as we are today. Going back to MCNC specifically, you know, we've touched virtually every county in the state affordably and effectively, removing as many of the connectivity barriers previously experienced in North Carolina, as we've all talked about. And through just this HERO project, which I dare say is just the tip of the iceberg when we talk about connectivity around the state, we're only getting bigger and reaching more people, and we hope to continue to do that. Tommy and Nate, thank you both for joining me today. I think this has been such an insightful conversation. I will give you each a moment for one final thought for our listeners. And Nate, I'll start with you.
Thanks, Tracy. Again, really appreciate the chance to come here and talk to you and Tommy about our shared goal and continued partnership. You know, the one thing we haven't talked about as much here that I think is really important is affordability, right? If we spend, you know, a gazillion dollars subsidizing deployment of fiber and no one can afford it at the end of the day, I think we're in trouble, right? And we won't succeed. We won't hit our goals. Congress created a program called the Affordable Connectivity Program, or ACP. As a part of the bipartisan infrastructure law that helped bring low-income households a $30 a month discount from the cost of their internet service. This is a wildly successful program. In North Carolina alone, we had more than 901,000 enrolled households, not individuals, but households, right? Wow. This program was touching so many families and so many lives, and it was open to anyone below the 200% federal poverty level, anyone who was benefiting from Pell Grants or free and reduced lunch or Medicaid, right? All these different criteria groups were open to getting that discount. And we saw people sign up. When we launched Governor Cooper's plan to close the digital divide a few years ago, we set a goal of an 80% subscription rate by the end of 2025, right? By the beginning of this year, we had an 85% subscription rate in North Carolina. And that was directly tied to affordability. Unfortunately, Congress has allowed that program to run out of funding. It was so successful that it ran through its initial appropriation really, really quickly. And congressional action is needed to further fund the Affordable Connectivity Program and make sure that when you're talking about the HERO project and I'm talking about BEAD, and right, we're talking in these communities about these big investments, many of which are going to big, big companies, folks can actually benefit from them, right? That's a really important part of the story. We've got to have more investment in the Affordable Connectivity Program so that North Carolinians can actually benefit from all this fiber money, right? And actually get online and do their school or work from home or access telemedicine and so on and so forth. So that's just the last thing that I think is the missing piece of this puzzle, and that I think we should all be talking about more.
I agree. And I've had philosophical discussions about the fact that if it is not affordable, is it really accessible? Because they do go hand in hand. Just because it's there doesn't mean that you can use it. And so certainly there are people that have different degrees of understanding of that or belief of that. But if it is accessible, or if it's not affordable, is it really accessible? So to any of congressmen and women listening, or your staff that I hope are listening, please take this into consideration as you look at extending or furthering ACP in the future. Tommy, last word.
Yeah, I don't know that I could follow Nate, who so eloquently put, you know, that out there for us. So I do agree with what he's saying there. You know, I grew up in, I had family that grew up in rural communities, and, you know, you don't want to ever be faced with, you know, do I buy food for my family this month, or do I have internet, right? That's not what you want to be faced with. So the affordability is important, and it must, you know, meet those standards of real broadband that we talked about. I think from, you know, my perspective, obviously, with what we do here at MCNC, what we're trying to accomplish, we want to, you know, remain committed to serving as many community anchor institutions as we can with the new infrastructure that we're enabling, and then what we'll see happen with some of the BEAD programs. In some of these areas, those community anchor institutions will serve as a bridge for a while until the rollouts can continue to happen into the community. So I think it's incredibly important that we don't lose sight of serving those folks. And then, you know, another thing that I think is important, especially in some of these rural communities, is, you know, access to devices as well, right? And then training that goes along with that, right? Just because you have internet doesn't mean that you know how to use it appropriately and leverage it to bring good to your family and your community. So I think there's a need for continued programs that put those devices in families' hands, and also, you know, provide the appropriate training to show them how to find a job on the internet, to show them how to, you know, begin banking on the internet, things that we take for granted that they would find very much beneficial. So, you know, we could probably talk the rest of the afternoon about the benefits to what we're getting ready to do to, like, agriculture in North Carolina, right? You know, the ability for a farmer to see real-time data of what, you know, his crops will yield and produce, and what the rate for those, you know, what he's going to sell will be. And, you know, like I said, we could talk all afternoon, and I know you would welcome that opportunity, but I think we all have to go get to work on doing the work. So, but yes, thanks for including me in this, and it's always good to see Nate and talk to him about Wolfpack.
Yes, and jokes aside,
my favorite, you know, subject.
It is your favorite subject. Jokes aside, I will say that one of our board members actually mentioned about the education aspect of it, and how, you know, even though we expand connectivity, even through the middle mile program for CAIs, that when you start to look at last mile, who's educating these folks on how to use it? Small business owners. And Nate, I know there's been discussions about technology hubs that are popping up all over the state that needs to continue to happen, because that is where, you know, you can get a lot of value from that with these efforts, because it's not enough to just build it. Thank you for joining us on MCNC Community Connect. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation as much as we have. We're all very passionate about the work that we do. Nate and I have worked together for quite a while, and now in our separate organizations, but we all have the same vision and goal, which makes this conversation so fruitful and interesting. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts available online and make plans to join us again soon for our next discussion, featuring technology leaders and innovators across North Carolina and the nation. You can listen to all episodes of MCNC Community Connect now on www.mcnc.org, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. See you next time.